Welcome back once again to the Damage Report. I am John Adirola, and we've got a big show for you today. We're going to be responding to the latest interview by Donald Trump on Reuters, where he talked about his apparent power that he believes that he has to literally take control of the Mueller probe and run it himself. He's been paying a lot of attention to it for the last few months. Maybe it actually makes sense. He's sort of an expert at this point. We're going to be talking about the EPA's updated environmental regulations and the cost of those regulations, not so much in dollars, but in lives. We're going to be talking about the floods in India that have claimed hundreds of lives and much more in terms of the news. Then later on in the second half of the show, we're going to be joined by an individual who runs an organization that streamlines the process of getting sensitive government information for the use of everyday citizens, activists, journalists, and more. We'll be closing out the show with Today in Casual Racism, coming from the government and from the media. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I am so excited to be joined for the first time in studio, Shivala Madlina, my host, co-host of True North, a documentary series which we've talked about. Investigative journalist, writer, filmmaker. You've traveled almost everywhere in the globe.
You're getting too grandiose in your intro here.
But it's true. Where have you not been?
Lots of places.
But you've been to a lot of places as well.
Not enough.
She's worked for the BBC, The Guardian, the US-based sources as well.
Yeah,
you've done work in the Middle East, in Asia, all over.
I mean,
the Arctic, I can attest to that.
That intro was a lot, but thank you.
Okay, well, now you have a lot to live up to, so enjoy that.
Great.
But it's great to have you here. You've previously Skyped into the show to talk about Brexit and
Iran.
Cambridge Analytica.
Yes.
As well.
But I mean, if you asked me to Skype in about Brexit, I would probably say no because I'm like Brexited out.
Mm-hmm.
It's nonstop. Like, it's
she's UK based. I guess I didn't.
Yeah, I live in the UK, so it's just nonstop Brexit. I can't talk about Brexit anymore.
Okay, so we'll turn to some other news. Okay, first Brexit. No, we're going to be talking about the Mueller probe. So Donald Trump, that's the only thing really that he talks about. Occasionally he throws an insult at, you know, a person of color. But other than that, it's pretty much the Mueller probe 24 hours a day. And so when he was interviewed recently by Reuters, it's no surprise perhaps that he was asked about that. He's in some way, I guess, responding to, were you familiar with Rudy Giuliani, his statements over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, we get all the mania live and in color mm-hmm. in the UK. And yeah. I mean,
the color being orange.
Yes.
But yes.
I get really annoyed actually by the association of Trump with Cheetos because I really love mm-hmm. Cheetos and I really resent his association with that. But yeah, I mean, both his lawyer, this is the thing. Trump has shown a willful disregard for reality for the last few years in terms of just, I don't need you to know. I don't need you to have deep legal expertise in how the government is run. I mean, I'm letting you off the hook for that. But when your lawyer is willfully kind of just, mm-hmm. doing untruths constantly, that makes me seriously consider that you realize how much our entire legal structure is just held together by accepted norms. And that once the president's counsel starts asserting things, at a certain point that starts to become precedential and it just gets repeated and repeated and repeated. And it doesn't matter it doesn't matter if I tell the truth, it'll be called lying. So if he says it enough time, it's going to really put people off prosecuting him for perjury. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and look, we've seen how quickly the definition of fake news has changed from an identifiable trend generally on social media to, and polls show this, anything that's negative towards the government. That'll change, by the way, if a Democratic president gets into office. It suddenly won't be fake news, but that has moved very quickly. And now you have the president's counsel not just asserting that particular things aren't true, but asserting that there is no concept of truth for some fundamental things. And it's another performance that makes me believe that Trump might be doing the thing where you stand next to someone you consider less attractive than you to look more attractive. But he's doing that in a sanity sense. Send out the guy who is falling apart mentally more rapidly than you are, and you will look like a stable genius. But anyway, he also, in his interview with Reuters, he got into this area that we've been talking about with Rudy Giuliani. And here's what the president said. So if I say something and he, Comey, says something, and it's my word against his, and he's best friends with Mueller, so Mueller might say, well, I believe Comey. And even if I'm telling the truth, that makes me a liar. That's no good. And as we talked about in the show yesterday, that is not remotely how it works. It's not like Mueller is some god emperor that can simply say, this is the truth because I like this guy. they would have supplementary evidence, reasons to believe one person rather than another. And that would not be the entirety of it. He's not going to jail because he disagreed with Comey.
I know. I don't want to get into the soft sciences or anything, but I genuinely think that he doesn't remember when you've been a pathological liar or you've employed, just constantly lying throughout your entire career, then I genuinely think that he's lost hold of what the truth is. So keeping track of your life, he's talking you through his process there. He's like, even if I tell the truth, to him, the truth is whatever he feels to be correct in that moment in time.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll be called a liar. And I genuinely think he has forgotten what is, I mean, he knows he's done something wrong. But I actually think if you asked him to pinpoint, like if he was on his deathbed and giving his confession, and if you asked him to pinpoint what he's done illegal, then I don't know if he would know exactly where to start and what to say and how to disentangle the processes by which he's become in thrall and under the leverage of moneyed interests from within and outside the country.
He's existed in that context for so long that he can't necessarily see it as cleanly as an outsider might. Now, there's one area where they got into an interview with the president where I'm actually angry with the Reuters reporter, because sometimes you shouldn't ask the president something because that will give him an idea. So they asked him about whether he's thinking about removing Robert Mueller's security clearance, as he did with John Brennan. And Trump replied, I haven't given it a lot of thought. And then he probably started thinking about it. Thanks a lot, Reuters. That was great. He probably hadn't been thinking about it. You know how his mind works. You remember that 2-week period where he suddenly realized he's allowed to pardon people, and then that's all he did for 2 weeks, and then it stopped. We haven't heard anything since then. He's going to just start removing clearances left and right.
But
if Jared ever gets his clearance, Trump might remove it.
You see that a lot, though, where he's in an interview with a reporter, and the reporter knows their facts and knows and is trying to actually like game theory out like what's actually happening, because they know the laws, the rules, the way the government protocol, all of these things. And I've seen it before where they're like, oh, would you do this? And he's like, oh.
Yeah. And so maybe. There's his weekend now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I didn't know I could.
Yeah. Dangerous times. But we do have sort of, I guess, the headline grabber from this interview was him saying this about the probe, not necessarily about Mueller, but about the future of the probe itself. He says, I can go in and I could do whatever. I could run it if I want, but I decided to stay out. I'm totally allowed to be involved if I wanted to be. So far, I haven't chosen to be involved. I'll stay out. So this is again where I don't know if it's that he's been in this context for so long that he really believes everything he says, or if it's simply his like standard operating procedure is assert what you want to be reality and then hope that people go along with it. And very often with Donald Trump, they have. Him saying that he could get involved at any amount that he wants, even to running the probe. He's not qualified to drive a probe, let alone run any sort of government investigation. And of course it would be, I would say that this conversation probably borders on obstruction of justice. Certainly the idea that he could take it over himself would make a mockery of the very concept of obstruction of justice, which he's being investigated for literally this second. But he is either so oblivious to how the government and the Department of Justice operates, or understands that, as you said, we rely on this system of longstanding norms, which he has no respect for, and that might not survive his presidency.
He would have to understand what these words meant to be able to give them any gravity or meaning, i.e. probe, independent, any of these things. And he doesn't. He just doesn't. He makes things up as he goes along. That is how he operates.
Yeah. Yeah. So look, again, I grow increasingly tired of this entire process with him. I am still worried about where it might go, because he has previously talked, at least behind closed doors, about ending the entire probe. Now he might be thinking about removing the security clearances. The entire thing is a little bit scary and exhausting. Can I also say one other thing? And this is, I don't think people have acknowledged this previously. I don't know if this is a thing in the UK. Is LaCroix a popular drink?
LaCroix,
whatever it is. I don't know.
Don't have LaCroix in the UK.
No, but you probably have something like it.
No, actually, it's actually such an LA thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it.
So it might make no sense whatsoever that I brought this up, but I have one next to me in a cup. It's all I can hear. when we're not speaking, I just hear little bubbling, and it's driving me mad. Okay, perhaps I'm primed for that from the political context we exist in. Anyway, okay, that is what we've got for our first block. We are going to take a break. When we come back, two important stories that probably aren't going to receive the amount of coverage that they deserve. One is updated figures from the EPA on the amount of premature deaths that would be caused by Donald Trump's changes to environmental policy. And then the latest coming out of India having to do with the floods in Kerala, the death toll, how many have been displaced, all that and more when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the Damage Report. I am John Iadarola. Shivala Madlina, my former co-host of True North, our climate change docuseries, is in studio, and I am very excited because we talk often, but generally it's through some sort of digital communication, not in person.
Yeah, we WhatsApp frequently, probably during meetings that we shouldn't be doing that. But
probably not.
That's what it's for.
But now you're here, and we're talking about the news. And in this block, we're going to be talking about a couple of environmental stories. The first, the EPA has new figures on a change to the Clean Power Plan by the Trump administration. We're going to talk about the costs of that, and then also what the environment is doing to us in India in terms of the flooding there.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So first, we knew that when Donald Trump became president, the environment was going to take a beating, and he has made literally 100 or more changes to environmental regulations, power standards, energy generation standards, CAF standards, fuel efficiency for cars, and things like that. It's a topic we come back to regularly on this show. But this is one where there's very clear information about the cost in human lives that will be levied as a result of a policy change. So let's talk about this proposal that the EPA is now talking more about. It's the Affordable Clean Energy Rule, a replacement for the Obama-era Clean Power Plan, which was an aggressive effort to speed up the closures of coal-burning plants, one of the main producers of greenhouse gases, by setting national targets for cutting carbon dioxide emissions and encouraging utilities to use cleaner energy sources like wind and solar. So this new proposal, the changeover from the Obama-era plan, instead seeks to make minor on-site efficiency improvements at individual plants and would also let states relax pollution rules for power plants that need upgrades, keeping them active longer because the interests behind those power plants have said that these are either government overreach to have the regulations in the first place or they're just too expensive to make the changes to do the upgrades.
Yeah, the entire paradigm of the way that this, the language of it, it's class, it belongs in a different era. It belongs from like 50, 60, 70 years ago. When, remember, we brought in a lot of these regulations under Nixon. And
when the EPA was originally instituted.
And it was because, you know, between the 40s and the 70s, the chickens of our industrial revolution's past came home to roost in a real significant way for the first time. And being logical creatures back in the day, we thought, well, let's not completely destroy our environment. But the way this is framed is that it's illegal. Mm-hmm. No, it's not.
To do something in terms of these regulations.
It's not. It's just the use of legal-ish language by this administration is they use it as a hammer and also and they also have no understanding of what any of it actually means.
Mm-hmm. Or how the government functions. And look, this is one of the areas where you would imagine, like, how do you win elections after this information comes out? We're going to give you the stats in just a second.
Right.
But the idea that we had and it's not like the Obama regulations were like sent down from heaven and they were everything an environmentalist could possibly want. There weren't anything approaching that, but they at least helped to halt some of the damage we were doing, both to our bodies and to the climate, moving in the right direction. Now we have totally destroyed that. We're moving in the wrong direction. Also, there's the opportunity cost of what another Democratic president might have done to perhaps strengthen or go farther in terms of those regulations. So this is, I hate to be repetitive, but if you believe that there was no difference between the presidential candidates, this is yet another example of the massive change that one versus the other will have. Now let's talk how it will affect individuals. The Trump EPA, this is his EPA numbers, predicts that this new plan will see between 470 and 1400 premature deaths every year by 2030 because of the increased rates of microscopic airborne particulates. That is huge every year. And I have a feeling that if the government is erring in one direction or the other, it's probably not overestimating how many people will die as a result of this. And this is before years more of Trump or another Republican's environmental policy playing out. But as bad as that number sounds, that's what we get over this Obama plan, is 470 to 1400 lives every single year. The Obama plan would have moved in the opposite direction if we allowed it to continue, helping to avoid between 1500 and 3600 premature deaths every year by 2030. So you are talking about literally thousands upon thousands of American lives every single year off into perpetuity, so far as we know, until something is done to move our environmental policy in the direction it needs to go.
Right, and I don't know if you were, you sent me the Times coverage of this, and they cited the kind of hundreds of technical documents that were support, that were the analysis that are pulled together by EPA technocrats, and like their analysis is picking out the most likely scenarios to occur, and they're the most damaging. The most damaging are the most likely scenarios to occur, number wise, in terms of deaths, in terms of environmental impact, and if your own EPA is, because technical numbers can't lie, they can't lie. If you rise up through the ranks of the EPA as a scientist, then you can't bend numbers or whatever. This is their own they're just lying at that point. Then they're just actively and willfully going against they're representing the interests of the American people and protecting. There's a legal obligation for the EPA to protect American land, lives, etc.
At least as of right now. We'll see in a few years what's left of the EPA.
Yeah, that was the entire mandate of the organization. And it's just the whole, it belongs in a different era. I feel like it's the EPA from the 50s or something.
Yeah, or what you would have had in place of the EPA in the 50s.
Exactly.
The approach that prior governments might have had towards the environment. And generally then, at least they had a bit of an excuse in terms of ignorance. I mean, not 100% ignorance. We showed last week, I believe it was an article from 1911 talking about how increased burning of coal would affect the climate and heat up the world. So we've known about this for over 100 years. But this is just, I mean, look, it is not an exaggeration to say that if we do not reverse this change, you will have, at the very least, under the most likely circumstances, as Shivala has said, a 9/11 a year of unnecessary premature deaths as a result of this environmental change. And thankfully, places like the New York Times wrote it up. They did a good amount of research. Maybe CNN will have an article about it. And how much coverage other than that will this story actually have when we are talking about something that will kill far more American lives than 9/11, than our involvement in Syria and Afghanistan and Iraq, not just over a decade, every single year. And because those deaths don't come as a result of a bomb blast or a bullet shot, they come as a result of somebody dying from respiratory illness and things like that. We just pretend that it's not a big problem, both because we're terrible as Americans in focusing on what's really going on, but also as a species. This is exactly the sort of threat that we are not evolutionarily prepared to actually address, even though the toll is far higher than other things that we focus more on. We'll have 100 times the discussion about ISIS or about some other terrorist group crossing over the border into the US than this, when this is far easier to solve and would save far more lives. It's just somebody is going to be sitting in a hospital next to a bed. Their grandparent is going to be dying years before they need to, and they're not going to know why. And it's going to be this. This is going to kill them.
Well, you talked about how they're going to win an election after this. There was a Reuters report that came out maybe a couple days ago. It was quite in depth about ground poisoning and environmental issues on bases.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Kids being poisoned.
Like, just like, to paraphrase, like, Kanye West saying George Bush doesn't care about black people. Like, the Trump administration's EPA doesn't care about killing people. They just don't. Their own numbers are telling them this, and they're like, we don't care. It's illegal.
They care
it's not
about
illegal.
Profits.
You're illegal. Yeah.
You're illegal.
You're illegal.
Yeah, tweet that to the you're illegal. By the way, Kanye West has moved in the wrong direction since he said that about
George W. Bush. That was Kanye's peak. That was peak Kanye.
Yes, and we've gone the wrong direction. So at the same time that we're wrecking our environment here, the environment is fighting back around the globe. And one great example of that is in India, where there's been flooding in Kerala. There's been an estimated $3 billion in damage. But far more devastating is the number of people who've been killed. At this point, I believe the official death toll is that 410 individuals have been killed by the flooding in India. At least 1 million people have had to flee their homes and are now moving into literally thousands, 3,200 relief camps as of right now. Now, there is money being pledged both by the central Indian government, by the UAE is giving $100 million in aid. Some of the other regional governments in India are pledging money, but this is an absolutely gigantic task to attempt to rebuild after this. And so far, the amounts that are being given don't seem necessarily up to the task. Now, the good news coming out of this, of course, and that this has been coming out over the past few days, is that literally thousands of fishermen and other people with boats in this region have been deployed and helped to save. I mean, the reason it's 350 or now 410 since this morning, the reason the number's not much more is that these fishermen were deployed. And there are individuals who say that they helped to relocate 600, 1,000, 1,500 people. And that is exactly the sort of thing you want to see in tragedies like this.
I mean, I know that Kerala is this faraway exotic place and it's a disaster, like a huge flood that we could never have like an idea about. Mm-hmm. But we should care about this because this is a blueprint about how things will be managed in our future. And we should care about the fact that the UAE is using this disaster as like a leverage point. We should care about the fact that it was mismanagement and corruption of the dams. It was, yeah. There's climate as well, but then, human response to climate.
Not doing like the, I don't know what the effect, the equivalent in water in terms of burning off the amount of
it's
water
important
they have
to
in
pay,
advance.
Yeah, it's important to pay attention to how governments and people are responding to this because this sort of thing is not going to be far away and far off for everybody for very long.
And it's the perfect confluence of the effect of the environment and then government, because you have basically the amount of rain that they should have gotten over the course of 4 or more months, all being dumped in 2.5 months. But then you also have the government not necessarily doing what they should have. And there are supposed to be these natural barriers to help control or prevent some of the flooding, but those have been destroyed through deforestation, the building up of more communities and things like that. And that is something that is going to be more common as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally like a case study for what not to do and how not to manage a disaster.
Yeah, and many people have lost their lives. Absolutely tragic. Okay, we are going to take another break. When we come back, a reporter for the New York Times shares a voicemail that he got. How do you think regular Americans are reaching out to the media these days? We'll show you after this. Welcome back, everyone. This is The Damage Report. I am Johnny Rolla, Shivala Madlina, fresh out of the UK and in studio here in LA. As fresh as you can be in the heat that we have here. So we turn now to the war on the media, which we might have a bit of a disagreement on, but at the very least, we do have some scary voicemail to play for you. So Kenneth P. Vogel of the New York Times tweeted yesterday, if we can bring that up, he tweeted voicemail from a fan, "You're the problem, you are the enemy of the people, and although the pen might be mightier than the sword, the pen is not mightier than the AK-47. Now, I don't know much about the fan, I'm going to assume from the rhetoric that he is a progressive. Sorry, that's ridiculous. No, he loves AK-47s and he literally used the term enemy of the people, which I'm going to guess if you were to plug into Google Trends has become more common online as of late. In any event, let's play an excerpt of that now.
Okay, Hillary lost. You supported a criminal. You still support that criminal. You're the problem. You are the enemy of the people. And although the pen might be mightier than the sword, the pen is not mightier than the AK-47. And just remember, Ken, there's nothing civil about a civil war."
So that was what was sent to a New York Times reporter. There have been threats recently. We were talking during the break about the Boston Globe having they had some extra security brought in because of a threat. There was obviously the shooting of a newsroom in Maryland that killed 4 people. And that is going around. And before then, and especially since then, the president, although he cannot be said to be responsible for any individual act of you know, violence. He's never specifically called for violence against reporters. He has called for violence before, has continued to use this term. He has refused to stop. And now you're seeing it pop up at these voicemails. What do you think? You're a journalist. You've worked in a number of different newsrooms.
Yeah, and obviously there's always been threats. Different news, like CNN and The Guardian, there's always been multiple different threats. Like I remember one of my mentors told me, like, if you want to be an investigative journalist, unless you're, like, really, he said, pissing people off, like, in a major way, you're not doing anything. You're not doing your job. You're not doing that job. Mm-hmm. So in a healthy, functioning democracy, the press and the government should, and even, like, large institutions, whatever, big businesses, wealthy powerful people should always be diametrically opposed. That should just, that's just natural and healthy. Mm-hmm. This is when a democracy is not when it is dysfunctional, and there are things like a gun problem or a corrupt police force. You have issues like, remember in the speaker in Oslo, the Bangladeshi blogger. They have a huge problem with there with just mobs being hired by government thugs and business interests who hire people to hack up journalists.
And he had been attacked with
a
machete.
And he had been attacked and he had survived. It was and he's still right. He's amazing.
And other people that he'd worked with were killed.
Right, exactly. And so there's a lot of things going on with this. One is, this is like in an unhealthy democracy and a place with a gun problem, this is how this manifests. Mm-hmm. But there's always been, if you're a journalist, you are supposed to be getting in trouble with people, number one. That's different from having the most powerful person in the country. His words matter.
So look, I agree with you. I think that there should be more of a confrontational relationship between the media and the politics than I would say that we've had under Trump or before. I think that we've needed more of that.
Yeah.
What I am more worried about is how willing a significant portion of the country is to take that rhetoric in. And then I would assume, maybe I'm wrong, pretty fundamentally change their relationship with media in general. Media that is not Fox News, Breitbart, maybe InfoWars. Anything other than that has now become the enemy of the people. We've talked about this poll before, but 48% of Republicans agreed, that's a plurality, agreed that the media was the enemy of the people, compared to 26% of independents and 12% of Democrats. What the hell are you thinking, Democrats? But 48% are now saying, more than do not say, say that it is not just too harsh, unfair, perhaps biased, I would say stocked with rich people who fundamentally don't understand what the experience of regular Americans is like, that it is the enemy of the American people.
Okay, so don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that that's not incredibly worrying and dangerous, but that happened. Trump is also, I would love to know what the numbers are for if you think that Muslims are terrorists, for example. Mm-hmm. The president has often used his bully pulpit to rile up violence, incite violence against other groups of people, and now it's on the media. And what's the only thing that kind of irritates me and rubs me the wrong way about this debate is the very anchors at the large networks that are sitting there and getting indignant mm-hmm. and self-righteous about it. And it's like, where were you all along throughout your career defending all of these groups that have been besieged by, you know, the harmful words of the president or the harmful policies of the president? And yes, it is the same thing. It's not like, oh, but now this is a bridge too far. No, it's not. It's just because it's on you, and that's incredibly self-serving. I don't like the false debate, the unhelpful, false, unproductive debate that's going on between, like, you know, some of the angers being like, this is enough. I'm just getting annoyed now. It's like, that's great. Would you like to, this is also like a gun control thing and a mental health thing. It's just that it happens to be the focus is on you right now. That's all I'm saying about, like, the way that the whole thing is framed. And I just, like, spare me the indignity and let's just be consistent across the board. And also, it's your job to piss people off. So, like, have a plan for when you do that.
Okay, I think you're dead wrong, and get out of here. So yes, I agree. And look, I would say that the most well-known, the highest paid angers probably have less to specifically worry about because they are in buildings that have a great deal of security and things like that. But they still live individual lives. They still go about their lives. And as much as I point out what I see as various forms of bias in media, in mainstream media, you know, the high profile anchors and things like that, I don't want to report on, oh, Don Lemon was shot yesterday.
Yeah.
Which and he's been the particular target of a lot of Donald Trump's racist inflammatory rhetoric. And I fear that we could reach that point. I mean, we have already had a newsroom that was shut up. We've had multiple threats of this sort. They're not unique, as you point out. I mean, there have been threats like this for a long time. But he has a lot of supporters. They have a lot of guns.
Yeah.
And they really do seem to believe that the media is their enemy. That is the problem. The media, the deep state, everything else is kosher. It's the media, the deep state. Those are the big issues. And that is scary.
I mean, I agree with you.
We unfortunately don't have much time to talk about the Asia Argento news that broke yesterday. I do want to just say the LA Times editorial that questioned, does this throw into question the entirety of the Me Too movement? You are morons there. Now, the article says no, but they do the clickbaity thing where, if we could bring up that, it's the third graphic. Do the claims against Asia invalidate the Me Too movement? Can we bring that up? Again, the actual op-ed does not support that. But why would you even put that out there on Twitter where it will be gobbled up by people that have hated her and the movement from the very beginning and do want it to be invalidated? Anyway, I just
thought that specifically used that photo as well, like where she looks like menacing. No,
the entire
I mean,
thing is frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously doesn't. I'm not even going to buy into that whole discussion. It's the least surprising thing in the world that, like, if you have ever read anything about abuse in any in place or scale, like, you know that people who are abused end up abusing. That's if it's even true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I tend to believe victims. If what is alleged is true, that she's obviously wrong, and that has nothing whatsoever to say about the entirety of the movement. It might take her out of being an advocate. It does not in any way invalidate the concerns of those who've been abused or what we need to do to fix the problem in the future. Okay, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're joined by an expert who is helping to make it easier for people like you to get information from the government that in some cases the government might not want you to have. After this. With the current administration's views on transparency, it's becoming more clear than perhaps ever before that we need to be proactive in getting access to the information that will allow us to know what is actually going on in various parts of the government. And thankfully, there are organizations designed to help streamline that process. We're joined by the founder of one, founder of MuckRock, Michael Morrissey, joins us on the Damage Report now. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Good to have you on. So your organization, which is a combination of both a resource that stockpiles government documents and also makes it easier for activists and journalists and regular people to get access to this through Freedom of Information Act requests. What I'm interested to, first off, since I've actually never gone through this process, how has it been generally? How complicated of a process is it to get access to these sorts of government documents?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things is it's really intimidating and it's also hard to figure out what you can actually ask for in the first place. And so we started out in 2010 with the goal of just kind of making this an easier process and then also making it easy for people to share their requests. So one of the key things with MuckRock is if you file a request through MuckRock, we encourage you to file that publicly so everybody else can follow along, so other people can learn from what you're doing. And it doesn't have to be a challenging process. I mean, I think this is a really beautiful fundamental democratic right that the government works for you and you have a right to know what they're up to.
Exactly. And, you know, especially we had the scandal with ICE, you know, down at the border and all that. And some of our reporters at TRT Investigates have done a great job in filing these sorts of requests and finding out about distributions of resources, the acquisition of ICE, of, you know, new weapons and things like that, the money they were spent on getting like former CIA trainers and things like that to come in and train people working at the border. And that information was obviously out there, could have been acquired by anyone, but it took this sort of proactive step to actually get it. So through your organization, what have been some of the areas that you've been involved in terms of helping link up journalists with this information or that your organization itself has released?
Yeah, so we're an open site. Anybody can sign up, file a request to the site. So we have a real amazing variety of requests flowing through us. We have a really amazing diverse group of users who go after really important issues. In particular, we've looked at a lot of records around prisons and privatized prisons. We've looked at a lot of criminal justice issues. We've had a lot of users kind of dig into everything from use of force policies in various cities around the country, but also sort of federal policies, looking at, like you said, ICE policies and how those are changing under the current administration. We also take a look at a lot of historical files. So we have a book coming out later this year looking at sort of the FBI files of famous writers and sort of tracing how the FBI has sort of tracked people who dare to speak out and sometimes in ways that are pretty uncomfortable for a democracy.
Wow.
Hi, Michael. It's Shivala. I've actually used your site before. Before we even go any further, can you tell people why they have this right, like the potted history of it, basically? Because I think a lot of people are still unaware of what the Freedom of Information Act means, why it came about, and what it gives us, and why it needs to be protected.
Yeah, so I think the story of the Freedom of Information Act really comes down to sort of eroding trust in government, particularly after Watergate. A lot of people are sort of saying, hey, maybe we should be able to keep a closer eye on what our government is up to in our name. And a lot of trying to figure out sort of how do we have a government that's accountable and responsive to the people. But these traditions in some cases go back hundreds of years where essentially if you're going to have a government of the people and for the people, it needs to be accountable to the people. And so under the laws, there's a federal Freedom of Information Act, as well as each state has its own law. You have a right to kind of go to the government and say, hey, I want to see this document. I want to access this data. And unless there's a rule that specifically exempts that information, they're supposed to hand it over. Now, in practice, it can be a little bit tricky. Agencies can charge you large fees. They can sort of cite exemptions that if you don't know how to push back against them, can limit that access. But it's amazing how much of this important journalism, how much of important accountability does come out of public records requests, the Freedom of Information Act requests that people are able to use. I think way more transparency comes from FOIA and public records than out of leaks, and people often underestimate that.
So I've certainly seen indications in the news where, you know, the Senate Intelligence Committee or the House or something will say, you know, that they've been asking for certain types of information, maybe financial documents or something like that, and they've publicized the difficulty in actually getting that information either at all or in a timely way. When it comes to these sorts of requests, it seems fundamentally like if the process was being obstructed or slowed down, it would be more difficult to ever actually find out about that. So to the extent that you're aware, has the process of you doing these requests, getting the information, has that changed at all under the Trump administration?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. So I think FOIA has been notoriously slow, and it's only gotten worse over the years for the most part. The Obama administration was widely criticized for being slow on FOIA. And the Trump administration, as far as our data shows, is even worse in terms of sort of speed. You can wait years for requests. There's one story where a woman actually sued when her husband died. She sued to inherit his request. And so sometimes things can take a long time. The first year of the Trump administration, however, we didn't see things get noticeably worse than they were previously. What our understanding was is that a lot of top administrative officials just weren't aware of FOIA and so didn't know to obstruct it. What we've seen over the past year, however, has been things seem to be getting a little bit worse. You're seeing a lot of FOIA offices, the EPA, the Department of Interior in particular. A lot of times you're seeing more political influence in what's typically a bureaucratic process, and that's a really worrying sign.
Yes, certainly with the amount of information, especially out of the EPA that we know in terms of the corruption there under the former head, the Interior probably doesn't want people getting to know about some of the sales that are taking place in some of these former protected environments. Look, Michael, I want to thank you for joining us. Look, running an organization like Muckrock, anything that makes it easier for people to get involved, to know what's actually going on and to take an active role in their government is great. So thank you for your leadership there at Muckrock.
Thanks so much, and hope people check it out.
Thank you. We're going to take one more break. When we come back, Today in Casual Racism, after this. Welcome back to What Remains of the Damage Report. Look, I want to do this segment because I don't know if you've been following the UK, but there apparently is a tape floating around of Donald Trump saying the N-word. And that would be a glorious find because that would be proof, the only proof that our government, the politics we exist in, are racist. But we don't have it yet, so things are probably okay. So look, we debated that on the show previously. I want to do this segment, which I'm calling Today in Casual Racism, as a reminder that you do not need a tape like that to be very worried about the racial terms of debate that we have going on, generally from unique, just white men, basically, in government and in media. So we've got examples of both. So first we have the president, Donald Trump. He was at an event honoring border agents, and there was an individual, Adrian Anzaldua, who is Latino, and Donald Trump happened to notice that. And so let's see how he chose to greet this individual.
Adrian, come here. I want to ask you a question. So how did you come here? Come here. You're not nervous. Speaks perfect English. Come here. I want to ask you about that.
Yeah, he does. He does, because he lives here. He works here. That's his job. He speaks. Yes, he speaks English. Why would you assume that he wouldn't speak English? But he just does. And look, they'll say, and they are saying, that he's joking around, which I find to be a good response. honestly. Because if someone says something racist, but it was a joke, it's okay.
I mean, the way he speaks reminds me of, you know, when I was starting out 10, 15 years ago, and just the way people would speak in just small meetings, where it's fine and it's funny because, like, my gardener's Latino, it's fine. Like, that kind of just stuff that would fly out of people's mouths. And he's never left those rooms.
Yeah. Those rooms are now in the White House.
We're 2 years in and he's not. Because he feels no sense of shame when that plane, I can't remember what I read once, it was something about like people that consider themselves good in business are missing a plane of critical self-reflective thinking. They just go.
I wanna read that.
They just go, and that can be good and it can be bad. This is a case in which it's bad. You know, you are in charge of all of the people.
Yeah.
So you might want to consider people in the way that you speak. Once you start factoring and considering people, that means you have to start thinking about being careful about your words and not being casually racist and setting a tone. And just, I don't know why I'm talking to like this, like I'm speaking to Trump about like his therapist, like his like a child counselor.
Look, we're not going to fix him.
No.
The goal is that hopefully other people watching these interactions in government will learn something. Because for whatever reason, we're still having a debate in this country about whether white privilege exists. Now, here's an example of it. I will never have anyone say that about me. They will never be shocked to find out that I can speak or that I can speak in public. They just assume that I can. And I don't have to consciously think about that, which is the other aspect of that privilege. But that individual, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's probably not the first time someone has said some BS like that about him.
Yeah, actually, like that's happened to me multiple times where someone's like, oh, you speak like really, you speak English really well. I didn't just then.
it turns out it was unwarranted compliment.
Yeah, and then I feel like shame that I haven't like learned a second language in my life. Mm-hmm. And like, what am I doing? I never wrote that book. And you're like, actually, that was like, I don't know how to feel when people say that. It's so odd.
Well, look, that was, now many people see that and think, oh, that wasn't racist, it was just a joke. Okay, fine. Well, let's go to the center of media racism these days. That is the Tucker Carlson show on Fox News. So he had author Mark Steyn on. And so we've got a couple of clips from his show. Now, this is just you take a few minutes to watch their show and you will come across things like this.
Mark Steyn is an author and columnist. He joins us tonight. I wonder, Mark, we've been kind of casting about for who's going to run as the VP candidate for a Democrat in 2020. Why wouldn't it be an illegal alien accused of murder? That's kind of the perfect distillation of what the party stands for right now, I would say.
So, look, there are things about Tucker Carlson that you might not like. You might disagree with him on particular policies, but you do have to give him that he is intellectually honest and fair. I want a murderer. I want a terrorist as my presidential candidate. That's what I want because I'm a commie.
I know. I'm sorry. I know you want me to like dissect what he's just said. But
yes.
You
don't have to watch Tucker Carlson because you live in the UK, but you're here now. So you have to deal with what we deal with.
He's a joke person.
He's a joke person that millions of people watch every single day, apparently.
I think those people are like in hospital wards and possibly not conscious.
That is possible.
Like drooling on themselves.
That could be.
I'm sorry, I can't go any intellectually deeper with him. I just like there's zero point into mm-hmm. dissecting that. Like he's a bot. He's a flesh bot mm-hmm. that knows how to like he's human clickbait.
Yeah, look, there is a thing where people don't seem to understand that people in media, it is not difficult to know what your audience wants to say at them. And I don't mean say to them. I literally mean say at them. It's easy to look on social media and to get an idea of that and to just say it. And you can do that and you can make a lot of money and stuff like that. He is very good at that. Tucker Carlson has probably been racist every day of his life. But he wasn't an out and out white supremacist on his show until a few years ago. And I think that was a result of him sticking his toe in the water, realizing that the water is racist, and then doing his show accordingly.
But that's why they get so offended when you call them racist, because they're like, what? The word noise that was coming out of my mouth during my show just to rile people up, that's not who I am. I'm mm-hmm. just a sellout. I'm
just
a corporate whore.
It's just a character. You said it, not me. But I'll also say, he is a corporate whore. That is what he is. We don't have much time, so let's roll this the second bit of audio for you.
Well, this couple have been illegally in the United States for 12 years, and they have 5 children. So simply, if you're playing the odds, you've got roughly, whenever you pull them over, you've got roughly a 50-50 chance of them being pregnant. That's actually very demographically revealing of where California is headed. 2 people who shouldn't be in the country have nevertheless had 5 anchor babies in a country where the fertility fertility rate is 1.75 children per couple. So actually, this is California's future.
That is just racism. That is all it is. And they wear ties and they have fancy graphics behind them and it's on Fox News. And so we pretend that it's just a different viewpoint. It is just the racist guy at the bar put on a tie and now his face is in front of you.
So are we also going to pretend that you aren't clearly also foreign, but because you're the right kind of foreign?
He is the right kind of foreign.
No, because you're British, it's okay. And what the hell do you know about fertility rates? And like, you've done a deep dive gynecological exam of people, of like demographics and people's fertility rates. That man is disgusting and he's pointless. And also, yes, we're going to pretend that you know anything about what you're talking about.
That's what we do in media all the time. So that is today in Casual Racism. Thank you so much for joining me. It's great to have you in studio, Shivala Madlina. You can follow her on Twitter. Always good to see you. And thank you for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow morning with much, much more for you. Thank you so much for watching this video from The Damage Report. Please don't forget to like the video and also to subscribe to the channel so that you get notified as soon as new videos become available. To hear even more about both this topic and other issues not being covered nearly enough by the mainstream media, you're going to want to tune in every morning to our full hour-long show. That's at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, available on the TYT Network channel on YouTube TV. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.